The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. You're very welcome along to The Greg Hughes Show here on Highland Radio. And we are with you for the next 2 hours. And we're going to keep you informed and entertained with everything that's happening across the Northwest and beyond. We love your comments. We love your calls. You can comment on what we're talking about. Maybe there's an issue you believe we need to be talking about. 086 60 25000, that's the WhatsApp and the text number, 086 60 25000. Give us a call if you prefer on 07491 25000, or email comments at highlandradio.com. And you can watch the programme, hop on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, on your smart TV, your Fire Stick, and we're across your mobiles on YouTube, Facebook, and on the X platform as well. Right, let's have a look at some of the stories making the headlines in the local and national newspapers today. And we're going to start with the Finn Valley Voice. Almost 1,000 Donegal couples helped to buy. The Help to Buy scheme is now in its sixth year. A total of 962 applications have been approved in Donegal, almost three per week. But Help to Buy and similar schemes could yield a great deal more if waste and inefficiencies were tackled, says Ms. Carol Tallon of Property District. The figures show that there were 1,740 applications from Donegal, 962 of which were approved. That signifies an approval rate of 50%, which tallies well within the national average. Just over 25% of grants went to self-build projects, with the remainder going to newly built homes. It's a government scheme. It's one that was much lauded when it was launched. We don't hear much about it since, but almost 1,000 of you benefiting out there over the course of the last 6 years. So maybe if you're in that space, it's something you could look at. Maybe it's worth doing a renewal piece as to what it actually is and what the benefits are. On to the Irish Daily Mail now, and that horrific crash on the M9 continues to dominate the front pages, as you can imagine. The Irish Daily Mail's coverage, the car used in the horrific motorway crash which left five teenagers dead, was bought for just €1,000 days before the tragedy. The BMW, which Gardaí initially thought had been stolen, was bought less than a week before last Sunday morning's M9 crash, which also left four members of an innocent family seriously injured in hospital. Gardaí have now ascertained that the high-powered 07 Reg car, which was driven the wrong way down the motorway at 3 a.m, had not been re-registered since it changed hands. Officers were in the process last night of talking to the previous innocent owner of the vehicle. There is no suggestion this person knew what the buyers had intended to do with the car, or that it was being sold to an associate of the dead teens. And what of those innocents that have been so seriously injured in that crash? Reporting in the Irish Independent, the three sisters injured in the M9 crash have been through an incredible, difficult and frightening time, a friend has said. A fundraiser has been set up for the family members, Ella Hendrickson, Niamh Kinsella and Alma Kinsella, aged in their 30s and 20s, and a seven-year-old boy. They were travelling to Dublin Airport on their way to a family wedding when a BMW crashed into their car head-on. Can you imagine that? You know, probably booking a certain flight to arrive nice and early, or perhaps maybe you wanted to avoid the traffic, you know, full of joy, heading off to a family break, a wedding, and then this, you know, two-ton piece of metal comes hurtling at you the wrong way in the motorway. Absolutely horrendous. The sisters belong to a well-respected family from the Craig Cullen area of County Carlow. Niamh and Alma Kinsella are in critical condition in Tallaght Hospital, while Miss Hendrickson is being treated for serious injuries in St Vincent's Hospital. A GoFundMe has been launched by a close friend of one of the sisters to help them face the long and challenging road ahead. This has been an incredibly difficult and frightening time for Ella, Niamh, Alma and their family, the fundraiser description says. On to the Irish Times now, and often quote the child poverty figures, and every time we talk about the wealth of the country, or we talk about, you know, the fact that we should all be grateful that this country is doing so well, I often reference the child poverty figures, because you can always tell really how strong a society, how successful a society is, I think anyway, maybe I'm being naive, by how well it looks after those that need the help the most. That really is a true test of how rich you are, I think, as a society. And we're not doing a great deal to address child poverty, unfortunately. Consistent child poverty reduced from 8.5% to 7.8% between 2024 and 2025 under a child poverty initiative being run by a unit at the Department of An Taoiseach. However, the latest figures show there is a considerable distance to go if the government is to reach its target of 3% by 2030. Consistent poverty is defined as experiencing both low income and enforced deprivation simultaneously. The Child Poverty Office was set up by former Taoiseach Leo Varadkar in his department in 2023 with a six-goal programme. The second progress report published yesterday shows a reduction of less than 1% in the consistent poverty rate between September 2024 and December 2025. So 208,000 children in Ireland are in households and are at risk of poverty in 2025. That's a massive amount of children who aren't getting the start in life that they deserve and any, I think, proper society should be giving them. But anyway, it's that time of the year too. Teacher union conferences are underway. The government has been urged to make the teaching profession here much more attractive. The Teachers Union of Ireland said the retention of teachers within the system is now as big a challenge as initial recruitment. They also said teachers are being put off teaching by ever-increasing admin duties. The union is pressing the Department of Education to introduce effective measures to retain those teachers who have recently started in the profession in the Irish education system. TUI President Anthony Quinn said teachers want to teach, yet it is abundantly clear that they are being distracted from teaching and learning by increasing administrative workloads. And finally, as it was mentioned there, and I'm not going to lie to you, I hadn't watched much of Rose of Tralee, but this was actually my predicted winner given the coverage of her interview. Westmeath Rose Kevin Nicola was crowned the 2026 Rose of Tralee last night. An emotional Kielfin. Is that her name? Kielfin, is it? No one's helping me there. Well, she was emotional, of course, as you can imagine. She said, I'm not usually speechless. I don't think this is real. I'm so overwhelmed and I wouldn't have been able to do any of this without those girls. The 25-year-old had earlier left the audience completely moved by sharing her personal journey with alopecia. She balances her retail work with studying to become a wig maker, a path inspired by losing her hair to alopecia at 15 years of age. And there's an awful lot of people that suffer with alopecia, and I think her taking off her wig, exposing herself in that way, is going to help other people, especially young girls who feel that they couldn't do that. Okay, that was a run through some of the papers today, just to let you know that Nationwide is on at 7 p.m. on RTE1 tonight. Thank you, by the way, for the person who got that into us so quickly. So you can see Remelton and Raffo in all its glory. Someone's mentioned that there appears to be some oil noticeable on the road surface at the T-junction between Convoy and Ballybuffet, which is pretty dangerous. You know, you can very easily lose the front or back end of the vehicle there. So if you're on that stretch of road, the T-junction between Convoy and Ballybuffet, just be extra careful because a friendly listener says there could well be oil on that stretch of road. Jacqueline Hogg is Rural Affairs Investigative Journalist with the Irish Farmers Journal and joins us now. Good morning to you. Thank you so much for your time.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Good. And you've been writing about the challenges facing school bus contractors. Concerns are there and continue over the rising cost of fuel and its impact on school transport. So what is the background to these concerns?
Well, we all know the fuel crisis we're currently navigating. And despite the measures brought in by the government earlier this year, there's now huge concern over those the lifting of the excise being reversed come September. So school bus drivers are probably, or school bus contractors rather, are in a unique situation in that they sign 5-year contracts with Busair, so they're tied into diesel prices. But the people I've spoken with for this week's article in Irish Country Living say that there is no transparency over these payments, that they waited 3 months for the supports for March, April, May, which they say are very welcome and badly needed, but that this these payments aren't being broken down. So they don't know if it's per run, per vehicle. And there's also huge concern that if the excise duty is returned come September, as the situation in the Middle East shows no sign of settling, that the rising cost of diesel could force school buses off the road.
Yeah, it's a funny old space too, because as far as I understand it, it's a blind tendering process and the lower tender gets it. So I can imagine it's incredibly competitive. And you could have tendered when diesel was way cheaper than it is now. And you could have, you know, really tried to go in there tight to try and win the run and keep your boss or your driver on the road. So they're in a very difficult situation from the get-go.
They're in a completely bind, in a complete bind over it all. I mean, school bus transport has been the bugbear of families and governments for eons at this stage. There's the uncertainty over getting your child a seat on the bus. There's uncertainty over getting bus drivers. There was the whole controversy there last year about retiring drivers over 70. And now this seems like the tipping point for a lot of these contractors. The people I spoke with, the majority of their school fleet would be coaches. And they said that, you know, earlier this year, it would have cost €500 for a diesel fill for a coach for a school bus. That's up to €740 now. So, you know, I think there's an acknowledgement, as you said, you're going in blind tendering. So, I mean, over the years, you could be tendering and diesel would fall. So, you know, you'd be in the money, so to speak. But it's the lack of transparency over what these payments are covering, what the rates are. One of the contractors I spoke to said, you know, back in the day, and he said it wasn't that long ago, you could go into the Bus Éireann regional office and have a discussion and, you know, reach an agreement. Whereas now it's all online, it's procurement processes. His actual quote was, you'd need training from NASA to get through it. So, you know, not to be flippant about it at all, this is a stressful time for so many families, especially in rural Ireland, where school transport is, you know, it's the only show in town. So to think that services are at risk, and I don't think the government's reluctance to actually come out and say one way or the other that they're going to extend this or that they're literally bringing the excise duty back in is helping matters.
And I would argue a disadvantage for this space and an advantage for the government in that we have the Hauliers Association that can speak, you know, almost on behalf of the entire industry. But because of the competitive nature of the whole school bus tendering process, and we've seen court cases of three or four bus companies sitting in a kitchen and ending up very heavily sanctioned. So there can be no conversation or organisation in terms of what they tender. My point being is that they're not going to unite to become as strong a voice, for an example, as the haulage union to press their case.
No, because as you said at the outset, it's such a competitive tendering process, you know, and people will, I don't know, possibly operate at a loss in the short term, hoping that things turn around. But for people with, you know, fleets on the road and established bus routes, that's not really an option. And it comes back to the age-old uncertainty. You know, there's two things certain about September. It's, you know, that your kids are going back to school. But for people in rural Ireland, it's whether or not those kids have a seat on a bus.
I can understand the government trying, well, I can't understand it, but I can understand governments trying to leave it to the last minute. Personally, I've said it on this programme, I do believe they'll extend them out. I think they've got the headroom to do it. But these companies, these individuals, they need some certainty. They're having to plan for everyone going back to work next week, and they have no idea what scheme will be in place or if there will be a scheme in place and whether or not they'll make money or not.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's trying to future plan insofar as any of us can at the moment. One of the TDs I spoke with for the article said the only thing certain at the moment is the level of uncertainty out there in terms of the Middle East and the fuel crisis. But we all know what's coming down the tracks: higher fuel prices, higher energy prices, higher food prices. So this is just another stress for families and for these small business operators as well, because that's what they are. They're small businesses in rural Ireland and they're struggling. And as you said, they don't have that collective voice that the hauliers have. They're having to go through Bus Éireann, who will say they're operating the scheme on behalf of the Department of Education, who got the funding from the Department of Transport. So it's layer upon layer upon layer, you know, and it just it's causing an awful lot of stress out there.
And generally speaking, they can't register for VAT either. So they can't claim VAT back on their fuel.
Exactly. Like, exactly.
Hauliers can. Okay. And did you get any response from government in relation to this? What their position is?
No, repeated attempts to get the Minister for Education, Hildegard Nocton, failed, unfortunately. So it's a story we'll keep on top of.
Yeah, and it's in what section of the Irish Farmers Journal again?
It's in Irish Country Living, that's okay. Out tomorrow.
Brilliant. I'm sure lots of people have an interest in that and want to read that. Jacqueline, thank you very much. Have a great day.
Thank you so much. You
bye
too.
Bye.
Thank
Look
you.
After yourself. Okay, that's Jacqueline Hogg there, who is Rural Affairs Investigative Journalist with the Irish Farmers Journal. Maybe you work in that industry. And you want to have a say in relation to that. Not all contracts are 5 years, by the way. She did mention five. I think there are different terms, but you certainly do have some that are going to be tied into five-year contracts there. Lots of you still texting in relation to what can we do about the situation on our roads. Greg, when an incident like that happened at the weekend happens, I often wonder where the various media outlets get photos of the victims. Usually they all use the same photo. What is the official protocol for getting a picture of someone? I have a theory about how they get them, and I hope I'm wrong, because if I'm right, it's totally unethical, to say the least. Are there laws governing this? From what I can determine in relation to that incident at the weekend, it's a mixture of maybe family posting a picture with a tribute, and once you post it publicly, it becomes you can just use it. Or secondly, images that might be sent via an undertaker as well for funeral notices. So a lot of the pictures that you will see are the funeral director's pictures, or they might lift them from a family tribute or something along those lines. If you're talking about maybe scouring social media, you will see that. And often where you will see that is when someone is convicted of a crime. You will see media outlets that will go and scan their social medias and will take a picture. And there's a process, and you can see it. I don't know. I don't do that. But if it's a woman, they'll try and get the most, you know, they'll try and get the most pretty picture of the woman. That's often what they do. And I'm talking about here, not when there's a death. I'm talking about when there's a crime or something like that. But it can be when there's a death. So they'll often use the most prettiest picture. Or if it's a fella, you know, the most menacing picture, because men are menacing and women who do bad things and are pretty. It's a media thing, for right or wrong. The government needs to supply our Gardaí with the technology that other countries are using. They haven't enough of anything to do their job properly, says the listener. Yet our government can give millions to keep a war going in Ukraine. Families are grieving through all of this, regardless of people or what people think. They were to blame for what happened, and they paid the ultimate price with their lives. What more do people want? They are gone now. Let's just hope the innocent people from the other car are okay and recovering from what happened. Statistically, this week in Ireland, you're less likely to be hit by a stolen car. But what about in the weeks ahead? This will all be forgotten, and there will be less patrol cars, and the young people will be back at it. The comments from the boy's families are sickening. He was a good boy, never harmed anyone, heart of gold, loved his nanny, etc. Not one person from those families have expressed any sympathy towards the innocent family caught up in this, or the emergency services who had to deal with the aftermath. Yeah, I don't know what to say to that. I suppose they're in the throes of their immediate grief. I'm not making excuses. I don't know. It's a human thing. I'm trying to look at what the human situation is here. I did see a couple of, and it was young people doing sort of pieces to camera, who didn't really mention the family that are devastated by this and struggling for their lives. And it was like, you know, these guys were innocent. They didn't go out to kill anybody. And I think really that's naive, because, you know, every action is a reaction. And, you know, if I run at you with a knife and I run at you without a knife, you know, you could say, well, you didn't mean to kill anyone, but if I stab you, I stab you, right? So I think what we have is different groups of people that are dealing with their loss in different ways, for right or wrong. Linda Doherty is owner of Glebe Farm Equine Learning. Hello, Linda.
Morning, Greg.
Good to see you. And you have beside you Kiva Gill. How are you getting on, Kiva?
All good. How are you?
Very good. And there's someone else in the background whose name escapes me. Who's that?
That's Bobby and Coco.
Bobby and Co. Oh, there's two of them indeed. Beautiful. Tell us about Glebe Farm Equine Learning, Linda.
I started Glebe Farm because I work with the HSE with challenging behaviours and additional needs and all that. So there was nothing really in the area, you know, for working with horses. So a friend of mine said then, because we're in such a quiet area here in Glebe, you know, it would be the great place to start up something for, you know, children and adults with additional needs. Mm. So it kind of took off from there, and we kind of just done the courses and we're kind of up and running now, sort of thing.
You're flying, yeah. And I'd have an understanding from previous interviews of how, say, for instance, you know, the water or water sports and water-based activities, and there's great work going on down in Rosnala in relation to this, can be really good in working with people with additional needs. Is it the same with horses or in the same space, or what do you see happening?
Well, I suppose since I started with the kids that are coming here, you know, when they come at the start, they're a wee bit anxious and kind of not really knowing horses and, you know, understanding of horses. But before they leave, you can see a massive difference in their confidence, you know, and they're very relaxed and, you know, kind of happy and chilled out and all, you know, when they're on the horse, or even if they're just grooming the horses and things like that, you know, it does make a massive difference to them, you know. When you see them when they come first, and then as they come for a few times, it just, the confidence just grows, you know, more with them every time they come.
Now, we're going to be talking about a coffee morning, which is upcoming. It's really to enhance the services that are available there already, isn't it? So
yeah.
Tell us more about what you want to be doing into the future.
Well, I suppose we have to, well, obviously in this country we need an indoor because we're just overwhelmed with rain and wind and whatnot. Like, so we're kind of trying to get that up and running. And then stuff like maybe, you know, the toilet, we need a toilet for additional needs because we have one at the moment, but, you know, with a child going in, they need a care to go in with them. So we basically need, you know, one big enough for that. And like mountain blocks, and we're hoping is also to do a sensory room as well for us. You know, sometimes we have groups here and a child, you know, kind of waiting to get on, gets a bit anxious and that. So somewhere nice for them to go and maybe just relax and, you know, chill out. Even coming off a bus, you know, into a different environment can be a bit overwhelming as well, you know, for them. So kind of things that we're hoping to, in the future, build up here, you know.
Which is great. And you've proved a concept, and it's a case now of growing it so it is more suited to people's needs and has even more benefit for the community.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Kiva,
yeah.
What's your role in all of this, Kiva Gill? You're with Sprianga Sport, obviously.
Yeah, so I'm the Disability and Inclusion Coordinator at Sprianga Sport, and we have had a group attending. We've had a few groups attending.
I feel like I'm looking around the corner at you here.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's okay.
We've had a few groups attending over the last 7 weeks, and it's been amazing. We're always looking for opportunities that allow children with additional needs to experience things outside of the traditional setting, and that's exactly what Glebe Farm has provided for us.
Was this the first time that you saw children with additional needs interacting in this type of an environment?
Yeah, it was the first time that I've seen it.
And what were your observations? You know, why do you see the benefits of it too, sort of from the outside looking on?
Yeah, well, the children had the opportunity to interact with the horses, and some of the children at the start were reluctant to go near the horses, and we've seen over the weeks the build in confidence from all the children. The different equine activities that they were able to do, like grooming, feeding, balance and coordination. And it was amazing to see that community interaction and the confidence building.
Yeah, and in that development, emotional or physical or whatever it might be, of course it's in that space and it's with the horses, but they carry that growth then with them, presumably, into other elements and aspects of their life and personalities.
Yeah, definitely they do. It demonstrates how when children are given a time, the patience, and how that can develop in the right supportive environment.
Yeah. Talk to us about your horses Linda? Do they have to be passive? Do they require specific training? Are they just very good natured? Talk to me a little bit about the animals who are, I would argue, are the stars of the show. No harm to you.
Yeah. Well, thankfully, the horses that we have are really, really quiet. We work a lot with cobs. And then just with these Shetlands, we have four Shetlands and who are extremely quiet. Now, at the start, obviously, like ourselves, they're a bit anxious, you know, when we first got started. But they're great. They're quiet. They stand there. They enjoy seeing the kids coming. And the bigger horses that are in the stable, when the kids come, they just like to knock at the door because they know they're going to get fed. So they have them. The kids have them spoilt every time they come. They're feeding them, and now they love the kids.
They just wait. They can hear the bus coming half a mile away. Okay. So, yeah. Listen. The truth is that you know, there's not a family either directly or by once removed that would not have someone in their life that would benefit from something like this. I think we're very lucky to have these types of services and to have the people involved with the ambition to expand them too, which is extra special. So with all that in mind, we're here to talk about this coffee morning that's upcoming. So talk to me about it, Linda.
Well, I just wanted to raise awareness to people that we're here as well, because trying to get the word out as well, it's, you know, we're on social media, but sometimes, you know, it goes to some people and obviously some people don't see it. So that's really one of the reasons, and just to raise money to make the place better for people with additional needs that are coming, you know, make it more, you know, safer, like as in mounting the horse and different things like that, just getting in the stuff that can help people that is severely disabled, you know, maybe even for walking.
Even within what you want is if a group of children, for an example, were to visit, that they all can participate. That's the whole theory of it, isn't it?
And that's right.
It would make it extra difficult if you felt that you couldn't include everybody.
Yeah.
So the coffee morning is at the Glebe Farm Equine Learning Centre. It's in Carndonagh from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Saturday, the 12th of September. And in terms of raising awareness of your presence there, Linda, you know, how can the public interact with your services, if you know what I mean, if they have a child with additional needs or adults for that matter? You know, how can the public interact with what you do?
Yeah, they can contact me on the phone number that's on our page, which is 086-026-2499. And our email address, it's glebefarmequine@gmail.com.
And Kiva, not putting words in your mouth, but I presume this is something that you've seen the benefits of and would fully back Linda in its development going forward.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, it's been a really positive summer with Glebe Farm.
Excellent stuff. Well, listen, is there anything else, Linda, just whilst we have you, that needs mentioning? And by the way, of course, you know, don't leave it so long to let us know if you're doing something or if you need some help publicising what you're doing, because it is great work. So, you know, we're another outlet there for you. But is there anything else you want to mention whilst you're on?
No, I don't think so.
It's always a good sign. Just get along.
I just hope to see everybody on the 12th.
Yeah, so it's Saturday week or so, isn't it? It's Saturday the 12th of September at Glebe Farm Equine Learning, Carndonagh, from 10 a.m. till 1 p.m. And a good opportunity to go and have a look about as well as get a cup of coffee and support what he's doing. All right, brilliant. Thank you so much, ladies. I do appreciate your time. Look after yourselves. That was Linda Doherty, owner of Glebe Farm Equine Learning. And we also were chatting to Kiva Gill, who's from Spriaga Sport and has been working with young people in that space in the summer. And you know what's lovely to see? And we heard from both of them the benefits of it, the growth in confidence or dexterity or whatever it might be, dependent on the individual who's been participating. And a lovely experience to get up close and personal with those beautiful big animals that we could see in the background there. Hi, Greg. Looking forward to the show. Thank you. Disappointed that Donald read out about the hose pipe ban and the heat wave. We had about 2 weeks of sun up here. If that, it's lashing here in Inishowen again. I'm starting to develop web feet at this stage. Well, listen, don't worry about that. You'll be grand. No, our situation is more complex here in the Northwest because it's actually demand as much as sort of a lack of resources. So whilst it has been drier, I know it feels like it's never stopped raining and the temperatures were low, but it is drier than normal. But we're also working with inadequate infrastructure, and demand is the issue for us more so than on the East Coast, where it's the actual sort of amount of water that they can gather, treat and distribute. You know, we've got places, and you know the places, where the population quadruples for the summer, and we don't have the resources and infrastructure there yet to cope with that. So it is as much demand. So whilst the rain is useful, it's actually an easing up of demand as we head into September that's going to really aid the ban being lifted in this part of the world. Loved the Rose of Tralee this year, well-deserved winner, but Dahi and Catherine did kind of spoil it at the end by walking in front of the Rose of Tralee and her family. We could hardly see her in her final walk. Well done to David James for an excellent performance. That's what I was trying to articulate to Lee. I think they were supposed to be speaking. I think they were supposed to do a wrap-up and then part, and then the Rose of Tralee walks out. But it didn't work out. They didn't do it very well. So it's not their fault. It's a live environment and it's all sort of seats of the pants stuff. But anyway, there you go. Has Malinhead turned into such a dangerous area that a councillor needs €10,000 to spend on security? Are we not going to address it? I talked about this yesterday. In this day and age, public life, as I said before, you know, the reality is you might need security, and there is a fund there that is established, and councillors can draw down on it up to €10,000. I mean, I think there's certainly some people, some councillors that might feel that they're at higher risk of an attack or something, but you just simply never know. If I was a councillor, would I draw it down? Yeah, I'm sorry, I probably would. I don't particularly begrudge them either, but as I say, that's just what I'm feeling here. Right, let's get on to Noel, who joins us here on line one. Hi, Noel. Good morning to you.
Morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing good, Noel. And you're talking, really, isn't it, about a friend of yours' experience. So you just pick up the story wherever you think is appropriate.
Right. Hi. Well, a friend of mine had a very bad accident a number of months ago. And he broke all his feet. He had a bad fall and he smashed up all his feet. But he's on a wheelchair and he is disabled at the moment. Mm. And his partner and himself were in Letterkenny shopping at the weekend. Now, he's waiting to get a blue badge, whatever the case may be. But he had to park in a disabled parking spot because the man can't walk. He needs to get as close to the shops or whatever as possible. So they went into the shop and they'd done what they had to do, and he came back out because he was getting very sore. And when he came back out, he went round the back of his vehicle, but there was an individual came flying out past, and he thought, right, what's going on here? So he got into his vehicle, and on his vehicle there was a sticker stuck to the vehicle. Now, what was on the sticker wouldn't be very appropriate to read out over there, but I'm sure you've seen it there.
Yeah, I'll read it out here just so people know. It actually kind of looks like an official sticker. It says, penalty charge notice, not disabled, just, and it's a word that rhymes with anchor. And it says, warning, it is an offence for any person other than the, rhymes with anchor, driver to remove this notice. So this is obviously some sort of a parking vigilante.
Yep, it would be. And look, I'm not jumping to conclusions, but was the lady or the individual right to put the sticker on the vehicle? Some people have disabilities. You can't see it in them, but was it right to do that?
Can I put it to you? It's not right, because this person's been through an awful situation and, you know, they will unfortunately need a disability badge. But is it right that when your friend does get their disability badge, which they deserve and need, that when they pull into a parking space or try to, there is some person who shouldn't be in there, parked in there, and they themselves might feel like sticking a sticker on their car because they'll understand the frustration. In other words, It's just unfortunate that the person that needed this, sorry, that received this sticker did actually, you know, need to use that space, but to the letter of the law, they shouldn't have been in it. Do you get where I'm coming from, Noel? It's complex.
Yeah, I do.
But it's an offensive sticker, it has to be said, and I would say it hurts because they're already dealing, I presume, they're dealing with the distress of having life-changing injuries from a very serious incident.
They are indeed. So it's just, I wanted to raise that with you to see, you know, you can't always see disabilities with people as disabilities, but you can't always see it in them.
Yeah, no, you're spot on. I do understand it. And the person who was sticking this, they were caught in the act and scurried off. Is that what you're saying?
That's it, basically. That's it, yeah.
Right, okay, we need to think on it. I think we can be too quick to judge. We'll throw it out to our listeners. Noel, pass on our best regards to your friend. It's distressing. They shouldn't have had to deal with that, but there's a lot of factors in there as well. Thanks, Noel. 086 60 25,000. So the sign reads, penalty charge, and it's not the worst swear word, but I'm not going to use it. The word begins with a W and rhymes with anchor. Penalty charge notice, not disabled, just the anchor. And it's at parking anchor. Warning, it's an offence for any person other than the anchor driver to remove this notice. And there's URLs there as well, so it's some sort of an online movement. The difficulty is that the person, whilst they clearly have an acquired disability, at this point they do not yet have the badge, and they were parked in a disabled bay without the badge. And it was an so I think their car was Northern Registered as well, so it's tricky. I don't know. Okay, right, let's take a break and get your phones out. 086 60 25,000, WhatsApp and text. Right, yesterday evening we learned of another serious road traffic collision here in County Donegal. The N13 at Burt had to be closed for a while as emergency services dealt with a two-car collision. Two young men were seriously injured and removed to Letterkenny University Hospital. A 19-year-old man and a man in his 20s. We wish them a full and speedy recovery. That road has since reopened. When can you talk about road safety? Is it appropriate to talk about it now? We're not talking about that incident, but, you know, we see instances so often. We just have to talk about it and keep people who are injured in our thoughts and in our prayers, because this is a stretch of road. And as I say, I'm not saying the road contributed to this, nor is our contributor, but this is a stretch road a lot of people have a lot of concerns about and almost expect to hear of collisions on it. Mark is with me. Hi, Mark.
How are you going, Greg? How's things?
Not so bad. And I know you want to join me in wishing everyone involved in that collision a full and speedy recovery. But this is a stretch of road that's been on your radar for quite some time. I suppose for those who aren't aware, can you, as a motorist, as a, you know, someone out and about there, describe it to us and where you see the principal dangers?
Yeah, Greg. Well, I actually live just on that stretch of road there myself. It's just for people who's not familiar, it's just right at the GA Club in Burt there. It's a sort of a bit of a built up area, I suppose. There's a few islands in the centre of the road, but you see, the problem is, Greg, it's still a 100-kilometre road and a built up area with busy junctions, and then you've got a lot of businesses on the road, and then the GA Club's, I suppose, is very busy as well. The islands, Greg, seems to be causing more of a problem than they're benefiting because of the speed of the road. Do you know what I'm saying?
I do, because if you travel through it, you do go, hold on a second, this is designed and set out to slow traffic down, and yet the speed limit says 100. Logically, maybe half a kilometre before those islands, and maybe, is it half a kilometre past on Greenon or something like that, the hotel, that, you know, reduced to 80 or 60 even when it becomes very built up, that would seem logical. And the road seems to be laid out as if that should be the case, but it's not.
Yeah, that's the way I see it, Greg. And there's another problem with one of the islands, and a lot of our people that lives around there, it's in the wrong spot, because when people want to turn into the... If you're coming from the Bridgend area and you want to turn into the GA Club, people that's not familiar with it turns in too soon, then they're stuck in the centre of the road and the island's in their way. They have to go back. They have to go back out onto the fast lane to get around the island.
I hear you, yeah.
And I live right just at the junction, Greg, and I've seen nearly every week I've seen near misses, smashes, people blowing horns at one another because, you know, it's just everybody's going too fast, too, like. But
yeah,
you can't blame people for going too fast, Greg, because, like, at the end of the day, they're driving at the speed limit. They're not doing anything wrong.
Mm-hmm. Of course, yeah.
If you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. And what an interesting observation from you, Mark, is that, you know, very sadly, the general public hear of serious collisions because, obviously, the road might be closed, people were moved to hospital. But as you're saying, you're hearing the screeches, the crashes, the beeps on a weekly basis. It's you're waiting for the next one.
Two or three of the accidents away back, Greg, was actually caused by the islands. People actually clipped the islands. The island is a wee bit tight, you know, and one of them is sort of on a slight bend. You know, if you're coming through there in a lorry, even yourself, you know, it's tight enough. I know they're designed probably to slow people down, but, like, if the speed limit's 100, like, people doesn't really have to slow down if they don't feel as if they want to, like.
I don't know how many warnings we need in this area, though, because there's some dangerous pull-out points as well, Mark, and pulling points, as you've highlighted some of them. Like, what are we waiting for before we do something? Because
there's a junction there, Greg, just as you come out of my house, and it's been planned about 20 years ago. It's one of them junctions. It's probably the only junction in the country that's left to do. You know, it's a fork on the main road where you can fly off the main road and go onto a by road without nearly breaking, if you know what I'm saying. Whereas the plans was made 20-odd years ago to straighten that junction so that you're coming out square onto it instead of coming out at an angle, like, which would be a big help to people too, you know what I mean? But I don't know what's going on. It's somebody higher up than me needs to look at all that. We might call out all the councillors and maybe get them all to have a wee look at it and maybe come up with some kind of a plan, because, like, you have a shop, you have a GA club, you have a graveyard, you have a hotel and stuff all on that road there. Like, and it's too much for 100 kilometres.
It's a built-up area. I mean, it's by any definition, it's a built-up area, and it has traffic calming measures on the road as well. Yet it has this outlier 100 kilometres per hour speed limit, busy junctions that need updating, crazy stuff. Okay, the problem, Mark, you talked about the councillors. I'd love the councillors to get on board, and I know I've spoken to some of them about it. But then it's the councillors, and then they'll say the council, and then the council say the TII, and then the TII will say survey. And you know what? What are we waiting for? Yeah. More people to be killed and maimed on the roads? We need to simplify all of that crack about who's
responsible. There's a lot of kids be around there, Greg, and even going to that club and all that. When you hear the screeching and the horns, you just be waiting for something, you know, for that news to come through that one of them wains has got knocked down or something. You're just thinking, what is it going to take for somebody just to say, right, this needs to be looked at. Let's make a plan and see what we can come up with. That, since the islands went in, Greg, I think it's actually got worse. There's actually been more accidents since the islands was installed years ago. Like,
the thing is,
let's be honest.
unfortunately, the way this country works, God forbid, if there was a multiple traffic collision there and numerous people died, it would get national attention, we would get ministers involved, and something would be done. Yet we have the evidence here on the ground, like we have in other areas of the county, to say this could happen. What are we going to do to prevent it? And that's a problem with the way things are run in this country.
I think what we need to do now, Greg, maybe a lot of us residents maybe need to get together and try and put a wee bit of pressure on the councillors for it. If we start somewhere and put a bit of pressure on them, and maybe it'll lead to something.
Right. Well, get yourselves together. Know. Get back to me, Mark. We're here to support you, okay?
No bother, Greg. Thanks
a
million.
Look after yourself, Mark.
No,
it's our pleasure. Right. Okay. Now, I'm joined on the programme by Dr. Gerry Lane, retired emergency medicine consultant, a title really that doesn't really tell the whole story, does it? Retired me backside, I think you might say.
Well, retired from one thing and exploring other options and the portfolio of life, I suppose.
You were amongst, you and Dr. Jack Collins, volunteer with Critical, the Emergency Medical Response Charity, and you've been honoured with the Blue Light Unsung Hero Award. You're not in it for rewards, but it must be very nice to receive one.
Very, very humbling, I must and very, very surprising to be put up in front of the emergency services Oscars, quite literally. We were very taken aback, but as I said, humbled, honoured, and extremely appreciative to be nominated. There were 50 nominations in that category. To be shortlisted was flabbergasting. And then to be sitting there in the hall amongst a huge number of first responders from all the emergency services and to hear your name called out was absolutely astonishing. I know how people feel at the Oscars now.
I would say there was a lot of respect floating around that room and I'm on about even before the award winners were announced, because you all know what it takes.
It was a very interesting group of people to be with. There were about 400 people in the room, and they included the people that you only ever read about in a newspaper or see on the news. The people from the Coast Guard, people from Romeo 115, the rescue helicopter, the RNLI, the Limerick suicide rescue folk. A huge number of people that you only ever hear about in the newspaper. And it was a fantastic opportunity to actually meet them and interact with them. And to be honest, we actually felt fairly much like small fry in the back, because we picked up that award not just for ourselves, but also for the charity and the team behind the charity, and also for the families and supporters who allow us to go out and do our work. We couldn't do what we do without an extremely understanding families and employers who let us leave at a moment's notice to disappear out the door, and we may not come back for 1, 2, or 20 hours, depending on the type of job that we end up with. So less for two chaps in suits and more for the organisation. And Critical is a private ambulance service. We're registered with the Pre-Hospital Emergency Care Council, so we're a legitimate ambulance service, but we're essentially run as a charity. There are only a handful of people who actually work at HQ down in Croom, and they facilitate the work of all our volunteers nationally. Now, there are 10 doctors, like myself and Jack, working nationally, with a new doctor coming on in Galway over the next couple of weeks. Welcome. But we have other groups of people. We have at least 15 cardiac first responder groups spread out nationally, so that's about 200 people. And we also have 190 off-duty responders, and these are paramedics and emergency medicine technicians who work with the National Ambulance Service and who at the end of their 12 or 14 hour shift go home to their own homes. But if they get a call to respond to an emergency within their community, they roll out again.
What is going on there, right? So say, for instance, you know, people who have done their service in emergency medicine and have retired and could do anything that they wish. You know, those who are working, you know, long hours in a tough job, but then make themselves available after work. And others who have other jobs but also have expertise that can be deployed when needed. What is it within all of you that makes you want to do that voluntarily and for this privately run charity? What's chemically happening?
It is, we are given a gift, I suppose, whether we're doctors, paramedics, EMTs, mountain rescue people, RNLI people, Coast Guards, Red Cross, St. John's Ambulance. We're given a gift somewhere along the way where we have a capacity to do something. And when the opportunity arises to assist somebody in your own community using the gift that you have gotten or been given or have worked on over the years, it is actually a privilege to actually roll out and to go and assist somebody while you're awaiting the arrival of statutory services. So I'd love to say it was something as grandiose as giving back to the community. I think for most people, they can't actually, for most responders, they can't actually conceive of a situation where they wouldn't respond. Mm. They are actually wired to respond, and they could not think of why they wouldn't, unless they've got some other commitment. They're at home looking after the children on their own, or they're doing something else. When they're available, first responders of all waters will roll out.
It's an interesting dynamic, isn't it? Because, as you say, fully registered and all of that, and work with the National Ambulance Service. And generally speaking, would yous be dispatched until such time as the National Ambulance Service can get on scene? So you're there to hopefully stabilise in those important minutes and save someone's lives? Or, depending on the scale of the incident, maybe you join with the National Ambulance Service in responding? How does that work, the logistics of it?
We are dependent upon the logistics and the activation on the National Ambulance Service. We are linked in to the National Emergency Operations Centre, and that's based in Tallaght and down in Ballyshannon. Hello down there in Ballyshannon. If an individual has an emergency and they dial into 999, they'll speak to an emergency call taker. Call taker will work through a computer system called the Automated Medical Priority Dispatch System, AMPDS, and the call will be given a code. So a cardiac arrest where somebody has fallen to the ground, their heart is no longer beating, they're no longer breathing, will be coded as a 9-ECHO-01, which is the highest priority. It's a purple code. The computer will set off a number of alerts then. So for the statutory services, for the ambulances, this will go to the top of the pile of any jobs that they are currently going to. So if they're going to somebody with a broken leg, they get a 9-ECHO-01 call in their area. They leave the poor broken leg man and they head off to this cardiac arrest. So that call goes to the top of the stack. At the same time, the same call is sent out via the National Ambulance Service's excellent new app, a computer app, which comes up on smartphones, and through the also excellent but slightly older texting system. So that 9-ECHO-01 call will arrive in the inboxes or on the text screen of the phones of people who are enrolled as cardiac first responders at the same time. So if somebody has a 9-ECHO-01 call, a cardiac arrest in my neighbourhood, for example, that will show up on my phone. The app will activate while the caller is still on the telephone to Ballyshannon. Once the information about the type of call and the location, and thank you very much for air codes are absolutely tremendous. You can plug that into your standard mapping software, and then you go off to that call. And sometimes a first responder can get to the location of a call so fast that the mapping software is still trying to figure out, is it this house, that house, or the other house? And that's a very interesting phenomenon, because you're standing there and there are five houses and you're waiting for the mapping software to say which one you're actually going to. So it's well worth, in an emergency, running out and waving at the ambulance and getting them in. So simultaneously with the statutory services being dispatched, the cardiac first responders are being dispatched, the docs, we would tend to be dispatched as well. In a cardiac arrest situation, we build a chain of survival from the first responders, excellent basic life support, early defibrillation, early advanced life support, drugs, intubation, that kind of stuff, transport to the hospital. And depending on the type of event it is, we're either going to be going to Letterkenny, or sometimes we're going to Galway or to Aughnagelvin for PCI. Now, that's for a cardiac arrest. And sometimes at the cardiac arrest, the last successful cardiac arrest I was at, I think we ended up with 9 folk there. 5 from the statutory services and 4 first responders. And that patient made an excellent full recovery. He's at home and he's probably listening to the radio right now. It's, and that's wonderful.
Amazing.
For if we take yesterday, for example, I know you were talking about car crashes yesterday, between 2:30 yesterday afternoon and 5:30 yesterday evening, there were three significant road traffic collisions on the roads of Donegal between Mount Errigal and the border. And again, the statutory services, fire, ambulance, guards were dispatched. First responders in the neighbourhood were alerted and were dispatched off. Now, if the statutory services get there first and they find no need for any medical input, they'll get on the radio and the first responders, the doctors included, will be stood down. And that explains the phenomenon you sometimes see where an ambulance or a response car is zooming down the road, lights and sirens on, and then suddenly the lights go off, the sirens go off, they indicate, they pull into the left-hand side, and they go really slow as they try to unwind.
They're stood down.
They're stood down. So you, as soon as there is no requirement, the emergency resources are stood down, they return to their bases or their locations, or they maybe receive another tasking and get sent off somewhere else. It's a bizarre phenomenon, and I think that all the Donegal drivers who actually make way for the blue light services, we really do rely upon your understanding and your assistance
and
to allow us to navigate.
Yeah,
and awareness to navigate the roads to actually get to somebody in an appropriate
It's a fascinating, fascinating insight into A, the workings of it, but B, really the generosity of time from these 300 plus people. This is a charity, by the way. It's one of those charities you wish to never come across, but if you do need them, they'll turn up and they could extend your time on this planet quite considerably. Check out criticalcharity.ie and it keeps and helps support a ton of equipment, the latest equipment and all that type of stuff, I imagine, that needs to be funded. It is a charity, criticalcharity.ie. It's the type of charity that once you've benefited from it, you become an advocate for it and a campaigner for it because you realise that it's there and its significance. Before I let you go, Dr. Lane, this is not to talk about per se specific instances or what may have caused them or anything like that. It's a general question. But as someone who's been very actively involved in education in relation to safety on our roads, collisions on our roads, as you look on and observe and in some cases respond, are you exacerbated at what seems to be a worsening situation on our roads, far worse than when you were featuring, it feels like, in those, you know, impactful adverts and trying to do your best to avoid seeing people in front of you in the ED? Have you any reflections on what is going on the roads?
It's a great tragedy that the number of collisions, injuries and road deaths are going up. It is a matter of record and research that the primary driver towards most collisions, more than 90% of them, is actually human behaviour. And that could be a source of despair for all of us, I'm afraid. But you know something? It is also a source of hope, because human behaviour costs no money to change, because it's something that we can do inside our own selves. We can become more ethical drivers, and each one of us could be 10% better than we are today. Each one of us could be 10% better, and it wouldn't cost us a huge amount of time, energy, or money. Let's have a little think about a simple thing that we could do. Simple thing that we could do is we often read the rules of the road just before we do our driving test, and then we put it away and we don't go back to it. And with the passage of time, we kind of forget how, what the rules are with regard to certain things, roundabouts, junctions, that kind of stuff. We forget. And that's normal human behaviour. If each one of us could just have a look at this, remind ourselves of the finer points, each one of us could be 10% better cheaply tomorrow. Now, that will make us a lot safer. It'll make our passengers a lot safer and make the people around us a lot safer. I do accept that is a pretty boring read, but That being said, it could be a life-saving read. It could be something that would save your life as a driver, save the people inside your car, or could save a pedestrian or cyclist around you. Just simple things. Have everybody in a seatbelt. Turn off the phone and radio and stuff. Don't be distracted. Don't drink and drive. And please, 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 just drive at a speed which is commensurate with the actual conditions. If we wanted to avoid, I'd say, a large number of collisions on our roads, if we just increase the distance between ourselves and the bumper of the car in front of us, that would go an awful long way. When we do our driving test, the 12 lessons, we're told only a fool forgets the 2-second rule. So we drive behind a car in front of us, they pass a pole, and we say under our breath, only a fool breaks the 2-second rule. And if we pass the pole before we have finished saying that, well, we are the fool. We need to drop back and give ourselves another little bit of space. Mm-hmm. On a day like today, where it's damp and greasy, we need to say that twice. 4 seconds between us and the vehicle in front. If we're into standing water, as there is a lot of standing water out there, we need to go up to 4 to 6 seconds. Ice up to 8 to 10 seconds. That simple thing, only a fool breaks the 2-second rule, that would cut down on an awful lot of the rear-end collisions that we see at junctions, lights, roadworks and so on. And that would save a lot of people a lot of discomfort, pain, time and money. Yep. So only a fool forgets the 2-second rule.
I shan't forget it, or I'll be the fool. Congratulations to Dr. Jerry Lane, to Dr. Jack Collins. Both of them received and were honoured, received an award and were honoured at the Blue Light Unsung Hero Awards, a room full of unsung heroes, it has to be said. Thank you so very much, Jerry, for everything that you do, but also for your time in coming in to us today, because I presume your app could have alerted you at any point during this conversation.
It's locked up outside with the production team.
Well, I feel guilty. I'm going to get you back to your phone. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Now, we're joined in studio by two guests, Abin Joshi. Good morning to you. Thank you for calling up to us.
Good morning. Thank you. Thank you for us having us.
And we also have Aria Sadish.
Yep.
Okay. And Abin is secretary of the Letterkenny Indian Malayali Association, and Aira is community youth representative on the Letterkenny Indian Malayali Association. And it's all ahead of a big, exciting event coming up this Sunday. I'll start with you, Aria. Tell us all about it.
So, Indian Malayali Association, it is a Malayali event where we as Indians all come together to celebrate our Indian culture program, cultural programs, cultural events all together. We all come up as a community. But this year, or LIMA, usually opens up to everyone. So it's not just Indian community, it's anyone can attend and, you know, see what all our Indian community is all about. Attend all the culture events and explore a lot about our culture and see all the talents.
And pardon my ignorance, is this a traditional day event in India that you're mirroring over here, I suppose, for the Indian community to celebrate together, but also to winding out to all communities? Is that correct?
Yes. So the celebration's called Onam. Onam is a traditional festival that we celebrate in India, especially Kerala, which is a part of India. And that's what we're mirroring here. We're bringing up all the communities together.
Abin, it's an exciting time. What can people look forward to?
Yeah, we are looking forward, everyone, all the community members, not the wider Donegal, all the part of the Donegal members. So we have a lot of talented people for a lot of programs. This event is not just possible without the local community. They have funded us. They have a lot of sponsors we have. So we invite everyone to the program on 23rd this Sunday, starting from morning 10 a.m. A lot of cultural program. Our feast, which is called Onasadhya. I invite everyone for the program.
What can people look forward to, Aria? on the day.
Yeah, they can look forward to fashion show.
Is this traditional Indian attire or yes. all different types of clothes? So lots of colour, lots of...
A lot of colours of Indian attires, I think. It's like saris and traditional Indian wears. So there's kids' fashion show, adult fashion show, and a lot of Indian classical music singing. There is a lot of Indian dancing, such as Indian classical dance. A lot of types, like Bharatanatyam, Kathak, and then there's like cinematic Bollywood-style dancing. And then we have a crew coming up from Dublin. They are a crew called Jump Streets. They're coming up and they're performing. And we have DJ.
So Jump Street, are they? Is that more in the Bollywood space, the drums, the beat that people might be familiar with?
They're actually a dance crew, yeah. So it's more like Bollywood dancing, yes. cinematic dancing. Yeah.
But in terms of the sound, it sounds very good. So it's a mixture of, you know, I suppose what the West is exposed to about India culture, maybe the more commercial side of it versus the classical to traditional as well. It's tying it all in, isn't it? Which is great. Okay. Any food, Abin?
Yeah, food. Yeah, we have a great feast, which is mainly 18 different types of vegetarian foods that will be served. And typically, Onam is celebrated in Kerala, where we serve the food on banana leaf, that on the special day. We considered that's a remembrance of the King Mahabali. He was ruled long ago. And that time, the prosperity, there was everything was there for the people. There was no problem. So we are remembering the Mahabali is coming every year and the feast is celebrating along with the harvest festival.
Yeah, and different tastes because, you know, to some extent, you know, people in Ireland or Britain or elsewhere have this sanitized view almost of Indian food. But within India, there is huge diversity in foods and favorings and what might be used. So what we might think as Indian food, it could be from a very specific, you know, part of India. And there could be quite a bit of rivalry too within those and who has the best flavors. Am I right, Arya?
Yeah, you're definitely right because within India, there's like Kerala food and then there's Tamil Nadu food and then there's so many states.
And different spices are prominent in South north, north, east, yes. west, wherever it might be. Okay.
Yep.
How important, obviously, and I think the element of opening this up to every community, but we have a very strong Indian community in this county area. How nice is it for to come together and to sort of maybe get that sense of, you know, either your home or your parents' home, you know, dependent on the lineage, because we always are somewhat drawn to where we come from yes. historically or literally.
Yes, definitely, because we only get to, you know, we usually get to go back home like once a year or like two times a year. And like for me, as born in India and raised in Ireland, I love being in Ireland and I do celebrate Irish festivals and everything. But at the same time, you know, getting this Indian festival up here and then, celebrating both as an Irish festival and an Indian festival and bringing up all these community together, it is like a big thing in my life. Something that I, you know, look forward to every year. We always look forward because we are like practicing dances. We're practicing all these fashion shows. We're practicing everything. And
so what are you going to do on the day?
Oh, I'm going to anchor the program. I'm anchoring the program.
You mean you're not going to sing, dance?
Oh, yeah, I'm going to dance, okay, and I'm also in the fashion show. Both of it.
What are you going to do, Abin?
Yeah, actually...
Stand there and look pretty. Come on, what are you going to do?
Pretty busy on that day, organising and things.
Of course, yeah. Events like this couldn't happen without sponsorship, Arya. So yes. Who came on board to help this event become what it's going to be?
We have around 11 sponsors. So our title sponsor is Sherry Fitzgerald, iMotors, and our golden sponsor is McGinley's Furniture. Then we have our silver sponsors, Stevenson Horan, Glenview Homes, Watson Hire, Fionn Kelly Solicitors, Experts, and Global Tiles and Bathrooms. And we have our bronze sponsors, which is Glen Estates and Pure.
And I just want to say to listeners, she did that completely off the top of her head, which is really quite remarkable. What a memory you have.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
Okay. When and where, Abin? Where, so it's on Sunday, right?
Yeah, that's on Sunday.
So where's the centre of it all? Where do people go? It's the Aura Leisure Centre. So yeah. I presume that huge space then.
Yeah, we have a huge space.
Oh, it's going to be fantastic, isn't it?
We have contact. This is our fourth programme. Every year we had more than 600 participants. We are also expecting this more than 600 participants this year also.
Mm.
Yeah, we invite every member of the community, not only Indian. So we are waiting for everyone.
Well, what an opportunity to see, you know, in Indian culture at its finest, and all this colour and the fashion and the music and the noise and the smell of the food. It's going to be a fantastic day. It starts at 10 a.m. and runs to 5 p.m. Area. So yes, people can dip in and out, or do you like people to come from the beginning and stay to the end and for a full day events or what?
They can come, you know, they can come in, go out whenever they want to, but the programs will be on from 10 a.m. until 6 p.m. So I think the programs, the dances and all these events are until 3 p.m. And then after that, we have our DJ, our Jump Street performing, and our traditional, how do you call it, the game called the Vadamali, it's a tug of war. And we will also be conducting that.
Right, it's going to be good fun. Listen, a lot of planning and organisation goes into it. So get down to this celebration of Indian culture. It's on Sunday, the 23rd of August, so this coming Sunday. It runs from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. And everybody is welcome. I'm sure the Indian community will be very well represented. But it's an open invitation for all of you to wherever you may come from to go along and enjoy it, because it's going to be fun. That's the priority is fun here, isn't it?
And as an Indian community, Indian Letterkenny Lima community, we're also conducting these charitable events because this is our first onam as if for the year, and then we have other upcoming events, and we're looking forward to do fundraisers and help our, you know, communities, like charitable communities like St. Vincent de Paul and the Cancer Society.
Okay, brilliant stuff. Thank you both, you Abin and Aria. Get along Sunday. The Aura Leisure Centre in Letterkenny starts at 10 a.m. Live music, dance, fashion, food. What else would you want to be at? Thanks very much, both of you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Right, 086 60 25,000 is our WhatsApp and text number. A caller says, can you ask Gerry Lane, how do you contact this service in an emergency, or do you know when it's appropriate to call? Such respect for this man, thank you. But as he outlined, and maybe this message came in before he did, they are dispatched by the ambulance service. It's actually very interesting to hear him explain the coordination there. Morning, Greg. Huge congratulations to Dr. Gerry Lane on receiving this prestigious award. I say well deserved. Have known Dr. Gerry a long time. Re-road safety. That comes in from Mary from Acart. An interesting, I hope he doesn't mind me saying, but he's such a humble man that he talked of afterwards, as we were taking a quick picture for our socials, he talked afterwards of feeling like imposter syndrome. I mean, is there another person in this county or country that would deserve such an award as Dr. Lane? And yet he himself perhaps doesn't see that. Morning, Greg. We see multiple deaths in Donegal, and the families of those lost have called for change in a public inquiry. No changes yet. But what do we do? We were speaking yesterday to a lady about the situation in Letamack Ward, and I noticed someone commented on the post that I spoke to about 6 weeks ago, and they says, look, we had the same conversation about our area and nothing's changed yet. But what we do is we keep going at it. We keep going. So you don't be disheartened by failure. What people in this county have achieved has been astronomical. So don't be disheartened. Keep going. Keep using us. Keep the pressure on. Because that's truly how change will happen. It has to be driven by the people. So, sunny spells and scattered showers today, turning heavy at times. Highest temperatures of 15 to 17 degrees with light to moderate west to southwest winds, occasionally becoming fresh and gusty. And just one line here from Malin, absolutely piddling rain, sideways hailstones and gale force winds. I suggest you stay well away from that space. What do you think, Councillor Ali Farron?
That's, what is it, false news, false. If the sun had to turn the blinds, the sun's splitting the stones.
The closest I'll ever get to getting sued there with that ridiculous statement from me. Listen, thanks for joining us. Thanks for holding. I was going to say thanks for your patience, but if you are in any way tied up with the defective concrete block scandal, patience is tested at every turn. It's an interesting story we're about to hear. It's horrendous, really, if the truth be told. It's your parents, who are older people, octogenarians, and, you know, we know what... They're lucky to be around. And I know your mother has her challenges, don't get me wrong, Ali, but they should be just completely chilled at this point and looking forward to seeing family and friends. But they are going through a rebuild. Talk to me about the situation they find themselves in, Ali.
Right. I thought long and hard about telling this story, to be fair, Greg, because it's a very personal story for me and for our family, and especially for my mother and father. My father is very much with it, and he will see the stories on Donegal Daily or whatever, because that's he sits and he watches all that. My mother was 85 yesterday, actually. And she has an illness that we call it dementia. She's in a good place at the moment, but she's still 85, and she's going, you know, that's the background to the story. And in 2007, after working all her working life, they built a retirement home. They worked a pub, which was, it's a 24/7 job. So they retired in 2007. To a nice house that they built, and it's home for us now because, you know, we're always there, coming and going. And then they always noticed that they're starting to crack. They've done corners and things like that. And it's been eating at both of them. Even before my mother was diagnosed with dementia, it's been eating them internally that they built this house. And that's the reason, you know, people would say, well, why not just leave them there for the rest of their time, and how long that could be, and one thing or another. But it's something that's been eating the both of them.
I was going to say, tell your dad that. You know, he's a proud, strong 84-year-old man. You tell him to, you know, see out your time in a house that's full.
Well, we actually did, but, you know, it's not the way he wanted it. So. Yeah. He's our father at the end of the day, so we got on the scheme. We got the blocks tested at the same time as I got my house tested. And while their house was built 5 years after mine, their house was in far worse shape than my house. And so the ball started rolling, and we're at the stage now that we had to move them out. And on Sunday, all the nieces and nephews, anybody that could lift something was there carrying, and We moved them out last Sunday. And, you know, while I was doing it, I was kind of thinking, what do I say about this, and how do I tell and deliver this story? There was people crying, and, you know, we were moving things that was sentimental, and, you know, so, like, we were formed to be a voice for defective blocks. And I thought to myself, I was standing about, like, sometimes people like me, we're expected to be able to say something, and it wasn't me from a point of view. I was just finding it difficult to deal with, but my way of dealing with things is telling about it and talking about it. So I went down to the gate and I done that video, and because the reality is that while I'm on here talking to you, Greg, the people that listen to your show, most of them, they know about defective blocks. They're tired listening about defective blocks. But the people we need to get to is maybe the people in Dublin, the people in offices that don't know enough about it. And actually,
well,
that
those that think it's fixed. There are people
it's
that
far from fixed, and you know that, and I know that.
And the thing too, I know you're focusing on your mum and dad. But you feel useless, I would say, is the kids and the wider family, because there's only two things. You can offer three things: help in moving out of the home, and you can try and reassure them, and you can try and comfort them. But that doesn't always land, so you feel helpless. So you can do the physical stuff, but you can't say, Dad, I don't want you to worry about this. Everything will be okay. In fact, give me your worry. It doesn't work like that. Life doesn't work like that. And it's very difficult to see people we love and respect having to go through something like this. I don't care how brave they are. It's a huge thing to move out of what you believe to be your forever home, especially having raised eight kids, worked your whole life. It's very, very tough. And sometimes the hope in the future of moving into a new home, that's not enough to counter the emotion and the hurt and the stress.
But at this stage of their life, we need to be fast to get them back into this new home. That's the first thing. Like, there's other families around me. One of them, I think I mentioned on your show one time, there were a couple, they had 8 children as well, and they were tossing their house about 2 months ago. And I met them, and he says, this is the most stressful thing I've ever had to deal with in all my life, you know? So while it's my family today, it could be somebody else's. And our family are lucky from a point of view is that their house is not massive. We're also lucky from a point of view, we have a lot of help around us. But there's a lot of people taking this on and they're on their own, you know?
Or even don't know where to start.
Exactly. So my job and the job of the 100% Redress Party is we've got to keep this topic. Now, as I done that interview, the Star or the Sun or somebody, a reporter there, is looking to speak to me after this. So it's important that we keep talking in the hope that sometime this show, you know, we get this story farther out of Donegal and out of Sligo and Leitrim.
For sure. Your mum and dad's home's being rebuilt. Your sister has started her rebuild. You're going to be rebuilding yours into the future. What if a national journalist says to you, this is evidence that it is a good scheme and it's working? There's 3 strands of the one family all getting their properties. I'm not trying to antagonise you. It's just, you know, I think the answer is important, is more important than the question.
I did say in that video, at least we have a scheme. Like, we know people cross the wee line on a map that doesn't have a scheme. So in some forms, we have to be grateful for having a scheme. Ideally, it's not perfect. The bureaucracy, the legislation, the things that we have to go through now to get it from where it is today to back to a new house is going to be difficult. I've met nobody that says it's great crack and it's easy to do. You know, it's stressful. So, yes, we have a scheme, but there's a lot. It needs to be better. It needs to, you know, be able to work for people. And that's where I see the fall. And like you mentioned, I have 3, my sister, myself, and my mom and father. There's 2, if not 3, of my other family that have defective blocks as well.
I guess you.
You know, and that's just within one family.
We have a situation where we've put new blocks around old blocks, bad blocks. We have a situation where we've put good blocks on bad foundations, potentially. We have a situation, too, whereby, you know, even the powers that be would be reluctant to buy blocks in this county because of the lack of regulation. How do we know we're not just really facing into this same crisis all over again? Not that it would be resolved before that happens. Like, what we're doing now is not preventing this happening into the future.
There is a 40-year guarantee, but there's still no guarantee at the end of the day on the blocks that we are using in this state at the moment. I mentioned that in the video as well. You know, we've been highlighting that quarries need to be tested. You know, we need, like, if you open a burger van tomorrow, the health board will be with you and they'll be checking your burgers.
Yeah.
And it's a simple, that's a £3.50 or a £4 purchase. But when you're buying blocks that's going to build your house, the main piece of your, you know, we really, really need to have some form of regulation.
It's crazy we're having to call for that because
We should have to call because
normally in different spaces you're saying it's an over-regulation, and yet here we are still in the midst of this multi-billion euro crisis and we have a lack of regulation. Pass on our best wishes, not that it will matter, but pass on our best wishes to your mum and dad. Everyone's going to be very sympathetic for what they're going through and going to be thinking on them. Hopefully it is a speedy transition into a new home. Ali, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Greg.
Look after yourself. That's Councillor Ali Farron there, 086 60 25,000. Right, there's still a whole heap of cash sitting here and we want to get shot of it, please. Can you help us out? There is, what, is it 16 grand sitting, gathering dust here? We want to put it into your pockets. We've had 2 winners as part of our super summer cash draw already here on Highland Radio, but we've got €20,000 in total and we've still got quite a bit of that to give away, the majority of it. We're in that same situation. If you feel you've missed out, you haven't, get in. You still have 4 draws and the big one, €10,000. The next draw is on David James's Jive Time show. Hopefully you'll have scrubbed the makeup off by then, to pull out the winning ticket, €2,000 being given away on Friday. So get your tickets now. We have staff here to process your calls if you wish. A, I'd point you to the website highlandradio.com to buy your tickets really safe and secure. But B, you can give us a call here at the radio station, 07491 25000. We'll sort your tickets out. Or in fact, C, you can call up to us here. It is not too late. You've only missed two draws. The bulk of the cash is still sitting there for you. €2,000 draw, €2,000 draw, €2,000 draw, €10,000. That's four draws. So lots of opportunity to win cash. We've had two Donegal winners already. Let's keep it going. One ticket is €15. You can buy five for 50. So if you want to group in with people to save a fiver per ticket, you can. We only ever want you to enter something like this if you can afford it and have a little bit of fun with your hard-earned money. But give us a call, 07491 25000. We'll get you in all four draws. Don't leave it till Friday. We don't want anyone missing out from here going forward. That's where we have to leave it on the show today. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Have a fantastic day, everyone. Stay safe and stay tuned.